history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, a program that reminds you no matter where you live in this amazing country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are indeed heroes around you. And this program is all about finding them and taking the time to listen to their experiences. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we are educated, we're entertained, and frequently we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Every once in a while, we end up in a situation where we just can't fit a veteran story into one episode. And that's where we find ourselves today, getting into part two of my conversation with the one and only Jimmy Weldon. If you missed the first part, you can listen to the podcast at hometownheroesradio.com. But for now, here's how he reminded us of where so many of us know his voice, or at least one of his voices, from.
There's a little duck named Yankee Doodle, and his best friend is Chopper, a great big bulldog. Fibber Fox, or someone I'm talking about now in the Yogi Bear show, someone chases him down the road, and he calls to Chopper. Chopper tells him to run. He gets there, and when he does arrive, Chopper says, "Well, now you're safe, Yaki. Where is your mama?" And he always looked up sadly and said, "I don't have no mama. Would you be my mama? Only you'll remember it this way."
"Help! Chopper! Chopper, you're after me!"
"Run, little feller!"
"I'm running."
"Yaki, now that you're safe, tell me, where is your mama?"
"I don't have no mama. Would you be my mama?"
Yep, 53 years after he first did that voice for Hanna-Barbera, he can still pull it off at age 92. In a few cities around California, as well as the Dallas, Texas area, some baby boomers remember appearing on his live local TV shows featuring Webster Webfoot. He told us how he first tried talking like a duck at age 12. He had caught the acting bug as a 7-year-old. We heard how he ended up in a combat engineer unit during World War II. His original unit was on Omaha Beach on D-Day, but he had been transferred out for pilot training, only to be pulled back into the engineers after the Battle of the Bulge. We heard about what he witnessed at Buchenwald concentration camp, and how he met his wife Muriel when he stayed behind in England after the war and attended the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. We even learned how somebody born Ivy Laverne Shin arrived at the stage name of Jimmy Weldon. And now we'll pick it up with his return stateside after World War II.
Had you been doing the duck voice all along?
Yeah, but just as a fun thing, when I went in radio back in Chickasha, 250-watt station, first job, I asked the manager, I said, "Could I do a program with the little duck voice I do?" Couldn't call him Donald Duck. I had to name him something. So anyway, in my book, I tell how I changed the name, because I'd use little Webster. Like, I'd take the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting here at the mic, and I'd say, "Oh, there's a little fella over at the door. Hey, who are you?"
"I'm a duck."
Well, come over here."
"Right here."
And he'd come over to the microphone, and people would call in and say, "Who's this guy?" Because they thought it was two different people.
Yeah.
And so that's where we developed Little Webster's voice, and he loved Spike Jones and all that. And that's where kept on going. And finally, when television came along, they said, "You're going to have to get a duck." I said, "What do you mean, ventriloquist?" I said, "I move my mouth more talking like a duck than I do myself." And, "Well, you got to learn." And so that's when I developed the thing of having little Webster, and I look at Webster. Most ventriloquists look out in the audience like, "How good they can do without moving their mouth." I had to look at him because I moved my mouth more talking to him than I did myself. But people used to tell me, they say, "How do you make his eyes move?" He didn't move anything. It was just the expression that we did for each other. You know?
Yeah, it made it seem like he did.
Yeah.
I've got to ask you, and maybe I'm way off on this, but you know, it seems that a lot of the great ideas and the true inspiration and the creativity that we take for granted so often, that a lot of times when it's first expressed or first originated, it's not quite as popular. Or there's naysayers, and there's people that say, "That's a horrible idea. You ought to quit doing that." Did you ever have somebody tell you that was bad?
Did I? The director of my first director, Dawes Butler, Everybody said, well, Mr. Campbell was the one. He liked me. He heard me on radio. Mm-hmm. And when I got the duck, he's the one told me, you got to get a duck. Because we bought a television station. I said, okay. So I got this, and then I came back and started, had Webster with me, and we were on doing an audition out there at WFAA TV.
In Dallas.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
The director, my Ash Dawes, my director, and three other guys, this is the dumbest thing. He won't last a week on the air. Mr. Campbell said, make his show good. And if it hadn't been for Mr. Campbell having faith in me, I would never done anything here. Wait, and later on, they said, well, he saw something in you we didn't. Mm-hmm. But then, and I gave my life story to a group of doctors. When he called me one day, and he said, Jimmy, he said, this is Dr. Abrams. Would you come down and give your life story to 150 doctors and their wives? I said, what? He told me, see, I was looking at the paper this morning. I saw, and he said, darling, I'm reading this paper article here about a man talking like a duck for a living. There's got to be a reason. I think he'd be interested to have to be one of our programs. So I go down there. I talk, and I take a little Webster out, and we do a little fun thing. I got through, and he said, well, then I'm not interested in you, but I'll buy any part of that duck. And that's where it all started, you know, on TV. So it was, I've been so fortunate, man, really.
Well, and I'm just thinking about the audiences that you speak to, and especially the young people. And you have the Center for Youth Patriotism, and you talk about America, but you also dare them to dream. And so often, yes, the things they dream about, there are going to be scoffers, there are going to be mockers, there are going to be people that say that's a horrible idea. What's your advice for people who really do believe in these things that they have, and they have some people that come up against them and say, no, you shouldn't do that?
No, that's what I say. I said, don't, if you have faith. I said, look, here's the greatest idea at all. I said, the guy pointed to the lights. I said, Thomas Alva Edison is the greatest thing in the world. I said, God gives us talents, but our creative imagination is far greater than any talent we have. Remember what I just said. Our talent is good, but the creative imagination we have is far greater. Thomas Alva Edison working on an incandescent light, and his assistant came in one day and said, Mr. Edison, I'm not really sure what you're working on, but you failed 967 times so far. And he said, no, I've just eliminated 967 ways that won't work. Mm-hmm. I said, God gave him that electric light in his mind before it ever appeared on a laboratory table. I said, don't stop. That's the key. So important. And so when you have a dream, just think about it. There'll never be another you. No way, shape, or form. Nobody can ever think like you do.
Mm-hmm.
You're unique in every way. The idea, though, that the key is so important, don't stop. Once you have your dream and you make a goal, don't stop. And that's what happened to me. I'd been on the air with Little Webster since 1950. Now I'm in Fresno, right where you are, and I heard a man speak on the word motivation. A desire held in expectation with the belief that it will be realized. Never heard that word before. When he started talking, I said, golly, I was listening to it. He said, there are millions of bodies in our cemeteries whose epitaph should read, died at 20, buried at 90, because they mistook their first goal as success and stopped. So when you reach your goal, you must keep reaching higher and higher. It's not a destination. It's a journey that never ends. When I heard him say this, he said, Hilton was a little boy, 7 years old, and he used to sit on the floor playing. He was a hotel operator. His parents laughed and smiled at him when he did that. And he'd talk about what he's going to do when he got big and had a hotel. Well, when he did, got old enough, he bought a flea bag in Cisco, Texas. He put into being all of those things he dreamed of as a little boy. Guy down the street owned a hotel came to him and said, Conrad, you've made a transition in this building. I can't understand it. Can you tell me what you did? He didn't say, heck no, get your own ideas. He said, I'll be glad to help you, because he loved the hotel business.
Mm-hmm.
6 months later, the guy down the street said, would you buy me out? He just didn't like the hotel business. Conrad Hilton didn't say, well, I'll be the biggest hotel operator in the world. He said, no, if I had two hotels, I could be of more service to these people in Cisco than I am now.
Mm-hmm.
See that? Thinking of somebody else. But that was the beginning of the Hilton hotel chain. Then he told me, he said, the thing about it, he said Napoleon Bonaparte used to sit on the floor pretending he was a general, playing with toy soldiers. Then he got us, he says, scientists take a bullfrog. They'll drop them down a Pyrex dish with an inch and a half of hot water. When his frog gets the bottom of that water, his legs are strong and the water is hot. And he comes right out of there. They catch him, empty the bowl, and put cold water in it. Another drop of frog in. He sits there to ribbit, and he'll never move. The water will finally boil until he dies. So that's complacency in our lives. Don't stop. That's why when you find people that are that my age, usually they don't, when they retire, they don't last long because this computer says they don't need me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not of any value. So I said, don't ever stop. That's the key.
And you followed your own advice.
Got two things going for us, Paul.
Yeah.
One of which we have no control whatsoever. That's time. One of my pet peeves, someone say, do it this way and save time. You can't save 1/1,000,000th of a second. Think about the time we've been on the air together now here. Mm-hmm. All these minutes are gone. You can't get them back. Can't save time. Spend your time wisely. The only thing we own lock, stock, and barrel is our attitude. Don't let anyone step on your attitude. I will hear not those who weep and complain, for their disease is contagious. Let them join the sheep. The slaughterhouse of failure is not my destiny. The prizes of life are at the end of each journey, not near the beginning, and it's not given to me to know how many steps are necessary in order to reach my goal. Failure I may still encounter at the 1,000th step, yet success hides behind the next bend in the road. Never will I know how close it lies unless I turn the corner. Always will I take another step. If that is of no avail, I will take another and yet another. In truth, one step at a time is not too difficult. I will try and try and try again. Each obstacle I consider is a mere detour to my goal and a challenge to my profession. I will persist and develop my skills as a mariner develops his by learning to ride out the wrath of each storm. So long as there's breath in me, that long will I persist. For now I know one of the greatest principles of success. If I persist long enough, I will win. I will persist. I will win. That's one of the scrolls in the Ogmandino's greatest salesman that ever lived. I memorized that and I've given it in churches many times in years. Yeah, 10 scrolls.
And I know you've got a fountain of motivational pieces like that. And I'm interested in your journey, because I'm sure as that 7-year-old kid, you never could have imagined all the twists and turns from going off to war, surviving that, meeting your wife, bringing her home. You both find careers in show business. But you started out, and you kind of went past this quickly. You start out at a brand new radio station that had never had a single announcer before. You're the very first announcer on this brand new radio station right after World War II in Oklahoma. You create this character, and he takes off, so you're on television in Texas, then in Hollywood, then in Fresno, and Salinas, and Bakersfield, and you're flying back and forth in your own plane to all these stations?
Yes.
I mean, who does that?
Well, I don't know. I've been the most fortunate guy God ever let live.
And you had talked about wanting to be a pilot, and your flight training gets cut short because they need bodies in Europe, and you go over as an engineer. Did you learn to fly right after you got back, or
yes.
How did you become a pilot?
Yeah, Moen, my brother, he was still in the Air Force. I mean, we're home. We buy a Super Cub together, and that's when I got my license, 1946. Kept on going, and I've been a pilot 68 and a half years, and instrument rated 55 and a half years. But, Paul, here's the key. You said it when you went by here.
Yeah.
Every time I do anything, if it's a commercial or any part in a film, that little boy comes to life again.
Mm.
When he says action, and you know what I mean, direction.
Uh-huh.
One of the greatest things, I felt so good at the Royal Academy. We had a thing called soliloquy where we'd do different things, talking about what was going on. We were assigned different characters, and when a cue was given, everybody would just stop while we walked around the room and did our soliloquy. And we had a critique after it was over, each one of us. One of the fellas said, I think Jimmy should have done it this way. Our director, I'll never forget, it's in my book. He said, there are three parts in acting. One is the writer, director, and star of his own productions like Ivor Novello and Noel Coward. The second is a director who can read and interpret the writings of what the writer meant and to give it direction. The least unimportant person on the screen or stage is the actor. Anyone who can take directions is a good craftsman in the field. And he said, Jimmy Weldon is one person here that can take directions.
Mm.
That made me feel so good, I couldn't stand it. And I see young people, we all have creativity. I told you about our creative mind. But when some young actors, directors, says, I want you to walk over to that wall, the light's coming through the window, then turn slowly and look at me and give me your line. And when this young person says, what's my motivation? Because I told you to. Now get over and do it. See, you follow me?
Yep,
in other
yep,
words,
yep.
If you can take directions.
And I bet you you got pretty good at that in the Army.
Yeah.
Did that help?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm connecting all the dots here.
Oh, Paul.
But
God
here's another thing. I could sit here for hours with you. I don't know if you'd be up for it, but I would. It's fascinating. You know, one thing that I believe that if there's anything that I've learned is that it's God's plans are always better than my plans. No matter how I line things up, his ideas are always better. And it strikes me that with your acting and voicing career, you've got this character, Webster Webfoot. You aren't pitching him to Hollywood and saying, hey, you need to put me on. They heard about you and they came to you and said, let's do this new Hanna-Barbera show. So
yes.
What was the first thing you heard about this idea of Yogi Bear, who's now, I mean, it's everywhere. Everybody knows Yogi Bear.
Can't believe it. Yeah, when Bill Hanna called me and said, told me who he was, said, we're going to start a new program called Yogi Bear, and he says, there's a little duck here named Yaki Doodle. We just want you to do the voice.
Mm-hmm.
I said, fine. But like I say, I had no idea what it would mean.
How did they find you?
They heard me doing, saw me doing Webster.
They saw you on television.
Right, yeah. Yep. So that's when they called me to come in.
And he's been Yaki Doodle ever since. Time for a break, but when we come back, we're going to hear Jimmy share how that duck helps him bridge the gap between the greatest generation and the latest generation and comes in quite handy in his motivational speaking. Check out the photos and video on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page and at hometownheroesradio.com, and we'll be right back after this. If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country, and they'll sell it for you. That's right. Consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everett's RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everett's RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes.